Hi, this is Sci-Fi Talk, the podcast on how sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and comics help us explore our humanity. Hi, today we're going tiki. Tiki horror, of course, with one of the masters of horror, Brian Usna. And we're going to talk about his Tales of Blood Island. It's a comic book you should all get behind if you love tiki horror. I mean, look at this. There's a guy ripping his head off. Come on. You got to jump on that. That is just great. Yeah. Before we start, I have to actually tell you this. This is really a true story. About a year ago, we surprised my brother and built a tiki bar in his little garage area that he has. And it's grown and gotten out of control. It's just totally amazing. So my family is really into tiki lately. So it's really wild.
Well, that's interesting because the Kickstarter video was shot in the valley. I'm trying to remember where, but maybe Encino or something, but it was in someone's backyard tiki bar. And great. It was, if your brother's is anything like that, I was just gobsmacked. I couldn't believe it. Of course, the whole house is devoted to tiki mugs. I never realized that there was such a subculture for tiki. I've always liked going to, you know, every once in a while, maybe you go to a tiki bar because it's just kind of like, yeah, it's kind of fun, you know, it's just something different. And, but wow, what a, this bar, if you'll see it in the, video, that's
fantastic.
In someone's backyard.
Yeah,
and it doesn't even show all of it.
Wow. You know? That's crazy.
It's amazing how people kind of glom into it because it's really just there is no place like tiki.
Nope.
I think it's just some kind of inspired by the GIs coming back from the Pacific after World War II, and they had been in the tropics.
Yeah.
In the tropics, you tend to drink rum drinks.
That's right.
And there's bamboo.
That's
and
right.
The bars are kind of built like that. Of course, it just became a whole aesthetic of its own. That is just a lot of fun.
Sci-Fi Talk continues, so stay tuned. Yeah, his bar is pretty good. I mean, it's grown in the year that he's had it. And we get together there once in a while. It's such a nice little escape. And you wouldn't know it. You walk into his backyard, totally normal. You go through this beaded entrance, and there it is. if you're curious, or on Instagram, it's the Blue Monkey. So Blue Monkey.
I'm going to look for that one.
You got to check it out. It's definitely worth looking into. So, yeah.
And so he has parties there? Does he hang out
there? Oh, yeah. And his son loves it. He invites his buddies over and they have like a little party there. It's fantastic. No, it's really, really cool. When we all get together, it's a blast to go in there and have a few.
Is he a tiki mug collector?
He likes tiki mugs, and he's actually become a pretty good mixologist, too. He's actually put together some really good potions that have affected me in many ways, I will say. But anyway, we regress. I love the tiki culture and everything. It's just a lot of fun. Tales of Blood Island. You know, this is a comic book, 36 pages, and the story, this is something you crafted, this whole story, you wrote this?
No, actually the way this came about was a long time friend of mine. I met him when he was running Monsters HD for AMC Network.
Oh yeah.
David Searing.
Yes.
And he I think it was maybe the first kind of horror cable channel.
Mm-hmm.
And he was licensing movies and transferring them to HD for his channel. And so I own a few movies. And so he licensed some movies and we got to know each other that way. And along the line, he left AMC and started doing his own projects. And he has a company called Drive Insanity.
Yes. Film.
And even though he worked for a big corporate cable company, he's just a complete kind of drive-in movie geek.
Yeah.
He just loves that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And he's got a man cave in his basement in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, that is pretty impressive.
Oh, that's cool.
A lot of tiki stuff in there. But anyway, we had business together since we try to get projects going, et cetera. And he picked up the rights to these Blood Island movies, which he released last year, which are these.
There you go.
These are the original Blood Island movies. Well, that's the classic image. Everybody's seen that image.
Oh, yeah.
If you haven't seen any of these movies, you've seen that. You recognize it.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And there's four of them. So it's, you've got the Beast of Blood, Mad Doctor,
yeah.
Blood Island, Brides of Blood.
Of course, there has to be a wedding in there somewhere.
Terror is a Man, which was kind of the original one that started it all. So, of course, this was this is something he licensed the rights and put out this and is trying to, and also got the reboot rights. And so he asked me if I'd be interested in working with him on it. And I said, sure, of course. And these things were made in the, I think right around 1960 and the years following that.
Yeah.
And I think Terror is a Man might've been 59 or 60. And they were made in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really, they follow this one character, Dr. Romero. And it's weird experiments.
Of course.
With this sap from a tree that happens to be green, by the way. And it can make monsters. And they're very low budget Philippine productions, but in English. There's some American characters in them. And so they're just, in a way, they're really just low budget crazy. But they're just a lot of fun. And it's that Southeast Asian, that Pacific type of feel. Mm. And I actually lived in Jakarta for a few years, like in 2007, I think, to 10, and had a company there. We were trying to produce movies in Indonesia for the world market, but kind of tapping into the kind of weird mythologies and legends and creatures that they have in that part of the world, which are totally different than the European ones that we're used to. A certain version of vampires. It's based on Bram Stoker. We've got Dracula, the Wolfman. We have a very, zombies are the Walking Dead now. They're the Romero-style zombies. So we have certain subgenres in our horror movies, but in Asia, they have a whole different kind of pantheon of creatures that are just incredible and just so surprising. And that's what we were trying to do until the Great Recession kind of shut us down. So I'm familiar with that part of the world. I've worked there when David came to me about his idea of rebooting it. I said, sure, whatever you want, but the best thing would be to shoot it in the Philippines and go really try to grasp that, catch that kind of spirit of the original movies. And then of course he was saying, I got to find a writer. I said, David, you write it because it's his project. It's David's project. And so he knows what he wants. And so he teamed up with Mark Cerulli. They just did this crazy script, totally bananas. Every 10 or 15 pages, there's a new monster. It's kind of written like RKO serials. These sort of cliffhanger things, always a new monster as it was evolving then. And then David started putting out merch. So he has the mask of the beast,
Yeah.
You know, it's a really good mask. He did a tiki mug. He did like cocktail stirrers.
Fantastic.
And coasters. Coasters around here somewhere. We were discussing that, you know, when you try to get money, especially from these platforms, they used to be called studios. I think they're all just platforms.
Everything's a platform now.
Yeah, it's Netflix, Amazon, Apple TV, all these digital companies now, which is what the movie business is these days. Well, people don't really read the scripts. Scripts are read by readers. They hire somebody to read a script. Mm-hmm. And it's so hard to communicate something that is offbeat. If you're strictly in a, you know, I've got this Walking Dead movie, they get it. You know, if you've got a big actor or something like that. I had, on previous projects, done comic books as a prelude to just kind of make something you could look at. And so David thought that he said, yeah, I think let's try that. He got Stephen Sestili, who's an incredible artist. I mean, I didn't know his work until this. And Dexter Weeks, who does the coloring and lettering.
Nice.
And they had worked on a tiki-themed comic called Coney Waves, I think. I'm not familiar with it. But when I saw, you know, Stephen had done for David already kind of this presentation, this visual presentation for Blood Island, which was kind of like bubblegum cards. I think comic books still do some of those.
I don't know.
It was pretty common.
Yeah, sure was.
I know they did. I know a company did it for Reanimator a few years ago.
That's right.
They're collector's items, and they'll take just like clips from the movie. But what Stephen did is he did scenes from the movie, I think like a bunch of them, like a couple dozen, and they looked so cool. And he did some covers and some presentation art, all based on these men's magazines from the 50s and 60s, which are not, I mean, it's very retro, but it's really cool. It's always some beefy guy and beautiful girl in trouble and some monster. And, you know, the art was already evolving when David decided to do the comic. And so then he said, well, let's jump into the comic. And I said, I helped him. And what was amazing, though, was that when Stephen started doing some pages, I looked at him and I said, well, this is how you direct the movie. This is the movie, you know. It's not going to be exact, but now you kind of have storyboards.
Yeah, you do.
And so that's kind of how it evolved. And then this Kickstarter thing, what a job.
Yeah, it is a job.
Kickstarter is like a, it's like a big production. I always thought it was just you get your iPhone and say, please give me some money and put it up. It ain't like that. It's a big effort, but maybe you could almost look at it and say, well, actually, maybe you're better off just making some money somewhere else and paying for it. But I think that the value of Kickstarter goes way beyond financing. It's really identifies your audience and brings a whole bunch of people in on something that is as it's evolving, as it's going on.
Yeah.
And it certainly then, you know, David made these shirts and bringing out more tiki mugs. And so it's really been quite an interesting process and has kind of given life to this comic book. And I'm really kind of anxious to see the comic book finished.
Yeah, yeah. Stay tuned for more of the Sci-Fi Talk Indie Film Podcast. Back with more on genre filmmaking on the Sci-Fi Talk Indie Podcast.
Scene one, Apple take two.
So that's the plan, is to have the comic and then eventually, make movies.
you know, based
well,
on those
everything.
Stories.
Yeah, I mean, the comic is a finished product in itself.
Yeah,
and actually,
sure.
Actually, I've done that with some projects that I didn't get made into movies. And so I did a comic of them because you just want the story to be told.
Absolutely.
The comic is different. The comic is different. I had one project that I had, I wrote a script with a friend, and then we made a comic, and then I wrote a novel of it. And each one is different. It's basically the same, but it's the equivalent of a Batman comic, a Batman movie, and a Batman animated TV show.
Yeah.
It's all Batman, mm-hmm. but they tell the story differently. And I think that the comic, I presume if it became a movie, there would certainly be changes because movies have a different pace and storytelling.
Oh, sure.
But I think that the comic will, at least we will have, you know, that Tales of Blood Island. And then hopefully it could be a movie. You know, you want everything to be, you know, multimedia. You want it to be bigger than one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, so I'm looking forward to it. Hey, now it's shirts and masks and mugs. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be a lot of this in tiki bars. I bet there'll be a lot of cross promotion.
Oh, yeah.
Tiki bars. And I think they invented some drinks, some cocktails.
I wouldn't doubt it.
For the Tales of Blood Island.
I would not doubt that, especially tiki-style drinks, and especially in that mug that is available, you know, with the Kickstarter. I mean, that's a great-looking mug, the classic green monster. I mean, how can...
And very smart, because the main, you know, the
Beast of Blood
has his head off. So
that's
this
right.
mug, you take the head off.
That's right.
and the regular glasses below it.
Wow, this is wild. You know, it's really, really cool.
Sci-Fi Talk returns in a moment.
So how is it doing so far?
I think it's 60% funded.
Well, that's pretty good.
It's only been a week, yeah.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think it's it'll be funded pretty fairly quickly. I think there's a lot of interest, and it's kind of cool because it's got a few different fan bases.
Yeah.
You've got comic books.
Right.
You've got horror fans.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got tiki.
Yeah. And people that like tiki horror, too.
Well, that's even, you know, getting deeper.
That's like, oh, sure.
And even, you know, people who are, you know, genre movie fans, there's a lot of genre movie fans like the old stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like right now, there's a lot of interest in 80s horror.
Mm-hmm.
There's a different feel to it. It was made for VHS, and it's totally not like movies today that are shot on video with CGI. And so there's an appreciation for it. And even some people will go back to the 70s and 60s. I mean, that's kind of what Tarantino has, that's informed his whole career, is his love for the old, what he called grindhouse movies. Other people call them B movies, or these independent movies that, in this case, this is horror, which is what I like. I'm a horror movie fan. What I love about this project is there's just more monsters than you can shake a stick at.
Oh, that's great.
So many cool creatures in it.
That's great. So is it safe to say that some of the action takes place in a tiki bar where the heroes might meet?
It does. It does. that is where the, you know, the Western character kicks off is involved.
Okay.
There you go. He's a kind of an ex-army kind of guy that now hangs out at the tiki bar. Mm-hmm. And of course, his old buddy, who's still with, you know, the Secret Service, comes in and says, "I think we need your help over on Isla de Sangre."
You know? There you go, Isla de Sangre. I love it. Of course, the scientist behind this, dare I say, mad scientist, is Dr. Lorca. talk about all the many things that that have come out of his laboratory, and that hence a monster before you could shake a stick at. So that must have been fun, you know, for him to dream up all those creatures and variations on a theme and that kind
of thing. Well, yeah, what he did was he kind of went through the panoply of creatures that that are part of the legends, mythologies of the Southeast Asia, especially the island cultures. And a lot of them have been in kind of movies. Indonesia had some really wacky horror movies back in like 1980, where they would represent some of these. And he just took artist drawings, put them together, put lots of versions of these creatures. Yeah, he didn't really, I don't think he invented anything in, he didn't go, let me invent a South Pacific kind of creature. He took the folk tales and legends and everything, you know, there's lots of depictions that go a lot of different ways, including some depictions that are kind of fake sideshow acts, you know, and he kind of worked from that. So he basically, it's all sort of based on kind of real tiki mythology, tales, folk tales.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I mean, the mythology there is very rich, and there's an endless supply that you could put in. Actually, I think the TV show Grimm actually used a Filipino legend in one of their episodes. Yeah, because one of their actors is Filipino, and he was kind of lobbying for this creature. And sure enough, it showed up on the show. And so, I mean, yeah, they were very diverse in their mythology. So that's great. So let's say it's totally funded the comic. How long do you think before you would actually start doing the movies? Or I guess, is there a target financially as to when you would be able to do that?
That's kind of David's.
That's his. Okay.
You know, his area. Mm-hmm. But I think he's you know, he's focused right now on getting these comic books done.
Sure.
I think if I'm not mistaken, in four comic books, he could cover his script.
Wow.
And his script is very long. It could be a bunch of episodes, like a limited series or something, or it could be one or two movies.
There you go.
I think he really wants to get these comic books, and I'm sure once he even gets one, he will start making the rounds and seeing if he can drum up interest in putting together some financing. And if there's, I don't know what any realistic projection would be, you know, the movie business is just such a crapshoot more now than ever.
Oh yeah.
You know, it used to be you could, you know, in the 80s and 90s, it just didn't seem you could do an independent picture and you could show the people who were financing it. You could project how they would get their money back. Because you could just say each territory, you were basically selling video rights, TV rights, you know, to a limited degree, theatrical. Each territory would have France is worth X amount of the budget. Then then that would mean that they could be pretty well secure that they were going to get at least like 80% of their money back. And if it does well, they could make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But today, you can make a movie and not get any of your money back.
Yeah.
There's these, you know, it's all platforms now. And so what happens is people think, oh, if I make a movie, I'll sell it to Netflix. That's success. But maybe it's success to you because your movie is there. But it doesn't mean that it financially it's not going to be a success, because they won't pay hardly anything. They pay a lot for movies that drive subscribers, and everything else is just kind of filler. They want the movie that, you know, when Disney Plus started, The Mandalorian was going to make people sign up. And I think, and that's the way all of these platforms do, HBO Plus and Amazon Prime and Hulu. They've got to have that series that makes people go, okay, I'll pay the $13 a month or whatever. But the other stuff, you know, Netflix will, you know, they'll buy the rights to the whole world. That's it. You've got nothing else to sell. So most people who make movies, who work in movies and series, they just are kind of auditioning for a job. And hey, the money's good if you can keep doing it. But it's kind of like winning the lottery, you know. But if back 20, 30 years ago, you could do it yourself. You could, or there was lots of little companies that were doing it. At that time in the 80s, you know, all the video shops were mom and pop stores.
That's right.
And they had to buy 3,000 VHSs for their store. And the big studios weren't selling their stuff. They thought video was a threat to them. And so all the independents,
that's where they flourished.
Like me, you make a movie and all these little, all these shops had to buy it. Well, very quickly, Blockbuster took over and became the Netflix of the era. And then all of a sudden, Blockbuster decided, made deals with studios about how much shelf space they'd get. And as an indie, you weren't going to sell a lot of copies to Blockbuster. So it's the consolidation thing. And with digital and streaming, certainly you can do VOD, video on demand. And, you know, I pay $3.99 for a movie, and I still subscribe to a bunch of stuff. But you've got to know about it. And the problem has always been marketing. And that's why these studios, you'll see a movie cost $100 million to make, but it cost another $100 million to market.
That's right.
You've got to get people thinking they've got to see this movie. But if you make your little movie, who's going to get it out there? And that's, I think, also, this is exactly what I was saying earlier about Kickstarter. I think really maybe the biggest value of Kickstarter is it gets the word out to people who are like-minded.
Absolutely.
Even if you just had the money and you make the comic book, nobody would know about it. Unless they happen to go on, where are they going to find it online? I guess you put it up on Facebook or whatever. You got to get, you know, some influencer out there pumping it. But with Kickstarter, you're kind of already creating a kind of a community for
it. Is a community product. Yep, absolutely. I guess the best thing is to search Tales of Blood Island on Kickstarter for people to join in and give their money. So definitely, it sounds like a lot of fun. I mean, this is just, it's a blast. Come on. I do have to credit you before we go about your work in independent horror and the Reanimator films, producing and eventually directing them. I mean, with the great Jeffrey Combs, who I've never seen an actor that is so good at articulating every single word he speaks. It's amazing to hear him talk. He doesn't slur his words for nothing. He's amazing. And of course, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. You co-wrote that fun movie. It was a different way to do the shrinking thing, like the Incredible Shrinking Man. And I will let you know, at Disney, when my daughter was young, we went on the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids playground, and she loved it. She had a great time. You know, I mean, you're one of the pioneers. You're definitely, I have very warm feelings towards your work and love seeing them. And they're just a blast and they're fun. And it's a nice it's nice for horror to have that instead of being so dark all the time. So it's I appreciate that, and I wish there were more of that, but unfortunately, everybody likes
it. You know, it's funny. I think it's all gotten, in a way, it's a victim of the genre's success. Mm-hmm. I think the horror genre has become so mainstream. It used to be horror was just sort of like a step up from porno in the movie business. You know? And it was not, you know, it's not something your neighbors wanted to hear that's the kind of movies you made. Mm-hmm. But they were much less sophisticated. I mean, some weren't. I'm certainly The Shining and The Omen.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, but Rosemary's Baby, Psycho. There's been really excellent just cinema that's horror. But a lot of the horror, what I loved in horror growing up, was the kind of the exploitation stuff, the William Castle movies.
Oh, God, yes.
Hammer movies.
Oh, sure.
Roger Corman Poe movies. Yeah. Oh, these things, you know, I liked the crazy stuff, the wacky stuff, the weird stuff, the Ray Harryhausen bad movies.
They were great.
Fantasy and horror are kind of part of the same coin. It's just, however, like Honey, I Shrunk Your Kids is a horror movie if you just turn down the lighting and give it a bad ending.
That's true.
And that's kind of the way most horror is. Most horror and fantasy, you can move it into a Weekend at Bernie's if you want.
Yes, you can.
But I think what's happened is that there was always this one level of horror movie making in which the people making it did it because it was a stepping stone. They said, well, I can make a horror movie, then I can make real movies.
Yeah, sure.
And that has become the prevalent thing now. It's become, you know, there's this terrible thing that happened that I saw happening when I was starting to do movies. And I remember this one French journalist was interviewing me. We weren't interviewing. I think we were having a drink, you know. And he said, well, you know what we like to do just to kind of like mess around with the directors, with the horror movie director? I said, what? He said, well, we just ask them, you know, do you consider your films political? And all of a sudden there's this, well, yeah, I've got something to say. This is more important than just, and I think it really took off with George Romero because Night of the Living Dead is
great movie.
In my book is it's the movie that divides, that begins the modern horror era.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it was strictly exploitation.
Yep.
Of course, every movie reflects the times that they're in.
Yep.
So they, you know, he happened to have a black guy play the survivor.
Yeah.
And he was shooting in Pittsburgh. These were people he worked with. So it wasn't like a big statement. And the fact that the guy gets killed at the end, of course, that's a horror movie. But of course, people can read into it. The movie's hugely successful. And then we see the sheriff and the deputies coming and making sport out of the zombies, shooting them down. And that appears to be that's certainly a cultural joke. But the movie was so successful that, of course, people started thinking it must be more than just a fun horror movie. And with Dawn of the Dead, now he was in a mall.
Yes.
And it was really a horror movie at the beginning of that movie.
Oh, yeah.
It was really impactful. But it got to the point where by the time he made Day of the Dead, it was all about the social commentary.
Except for
the Tom Savini stuff. When Tom Savini did a scene, it was back to the old fun.
Oh, absolutely.
But I think that happens with it's hard not to get sucked in, because when you make a movie, just like now, you're talking to me because I made movies. And so then somehow I'm going to think that my opinions must be pretty pretty important. Well, we all got opinions, right?
Yes, we do.
It's just that most of us don't have people asking them about
that. That's true.
And then directors, when you're directing a movie, you kind of become a monster because everybody does whatever you say. Mm-hmm. And if you make a successful movie, then you're really inflated. But now everything, we're in such a political era and everything, everything has to have a message, you know, because now they judge the horror movie by what the message is. And now we have these message forward movies, which for me, they're just not that fun theme park ride that I like in movies. I mean, I like every kind of movie, but, you know, I particularly like fun horror, fun genre.
And
certainly Tales of Blood Island is going to be
that is right there.
Fun. It's going to be right down. It's going to be right retro.
This is
just a fun comic and it's not going to be message forward.
Well, thank you for being on the podcast and what a pleasure to talk to you. And definitely folks, check out Tales of Blood Island on Kickstarter. Get the mug too. You gotta have the mug. I might get one for my brother because it's so cool.
Well, he's gotta have one at his bar.
Oh, he would love it.
And get a shirt. Get a shirt. I love this shirt. I think there's two colors. I like
Are there?
Oh, well, wow. I think one of them is kind of more subdued. I think it's like black tree.
Okay.
I mean silhouette. Mm-hmm. But I think this one's better for pops out at you.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Brian Usna, a real legend in horror. Thank you for spending time with me today and talking about Tales of Blood Island. And thank you all for listening to Sci-Fi Talk. Until next time.
Hi, I'm Brad Dourif, and you're listening to Sci-Fi Talk.